You're listening to a 3CR podcast of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia.
City Limits.
Brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9 a.m.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through the noise and find it through the smog.
City Limits.
Yes, acres and acres, but also a bit of elitism in the studio this morning, I'm afraid.
We have a headphone hierarchy in the studio.
I'm Kevin Healy, and Anne Maxwell, who's got the headphone hierarchy, she was just complaining she's got to use ordinary headset, and yet the person her side usually gets a better one than I get, and she's upset about that.
I have to have the same kind of headphone as Kevin.
It's obviously not one for equality at all. But it is the first Wednesday of the month, therefore it's Transport Day. I'm going to be talking to our regular transport commentator, John McPherson, later in the program. We're also going to, in the first half, though, talk to a bloke called Sean Tyrrell, who Sean spoke very well. He's a very good speaker at a rally 2 weeks ago, which was held for accessible public transport in Sydney Road. The previous weekend, there'd been no trains on the line, which is not an irregular thing on the Upfield line, and for the whole weekend. And in trying to get information as a blind person about what alternatives were, etc., Sean ran into all sorts of trouble.
We're going to hear the tale, are we?
That's right. So that's that, and I'm sure John would like to comment on it as well. Cup of tea, Anne.
Ooh, tea time, definitely.
Right. You're going to have to drink the same tea as me. I'm afraid it won't be anything. You know,
as long as I've got a better cup.
You elite people get.
I must insist on the good cup over here.
Yes,
Kevin.
You've got the one with the sort of dots on it, and the one with the Vietnam Morale for Ministry one on it.
I'm going to go the Vietnam.
You're going Vietnam?
Ministry for Morale, definitely.
Okay, righty. Your morale's been shattered by
that's
the fact
right,
you've got the wrong headphones. Yep, that's right. Now, I think we have to give it to the Herald Sun writers and their headline writers for very, very clever. They're so clever. They really are. They know how to make a thing. There's a lovely story in the Herald Sun on Monday, Why Mounted Police Love Living on the Hoof. Get
ho,
it?
Ho, ho, ho.
Victoria Police's mounted branch has been hoofing it across the state, earning high praise for stirrup-upping. Isn't that clever? Justice and holding the reins on crime.
On and on.
You galloped to 500, et cetera. It's just wonderful.
Geez, doesn't
but
stop.
They also say how they love to, you know, the be it patrols, protests or looking for lost people. Our horses are a crucial part of the police. It praises them madly. And, of course, protests get a mention because they certainly use them at protests. And they certainly used to use them very much in days of the old anti-Vietnam and those sort of programs years ago. In fact, I think it's safe now with the statute of limitation to tell a story. An Age journalist wrote a story praising John Darm, which was the police horse at the time, and a great story what a brave horse John Darm was, fronting up to all these protesters and all these terrible rabble like us. Anyway, I thought, oh, this is worth something. So I found some horse shit one day, and I put it in a box, and I posted it to the journalist and said, you've won the Golden Horseshoe Award. And that's the last I heard of it, but I posted it off to The Age. But anyway, I think I'm pretty safe to tell that story now.
I can tell that you're tempted to relive that experience.
Yes. Anyway, he got it. Oh, look, this is a very sad story. A couple of years ago, I wonder what had happened to this case. Remember, it was probably more than 2 years ago now. Mm. It was a fair one. In fact, the story might tell us, I think, 2021. In fact, it goes back a fair way. There were charges laid against poor old Jerry Harvey of Harvey Norman.
Oh.
Lovely man. I mean, Jerry never opens his mouth unless it's something that can give him some money. But anyway, Jerry was charged, along with Latitude Finance, for misleading advertising, because they had all those ads about no interest for so many years, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. What they didn't tell you was that in order to get that, you had to take out a Latitude Finance account, for which you paid an upfront fee anyway and then other fees, and so it was totally misleading.
Right.
And I thought, oh, they must have dropped the case because it's never turned up, but it turned up last week. Apparently it's been heard recently. It wasn't making the press, but in the end, now this is the awful part. Mm. Jerry was fined, or Harvey Norman was fined, same thing, I think, $5 million, $35 million, which is awful, isn't it, for poor Jerry, yeah. Latitude got 20, and the judge said he gave the higher one to Jerry because the billionaire's complete disregard for consumers was a key reason, his honour said, Michael O'Brien. And isn't that sad, though, for poor Jerry? Public statements made by Harvey Norman's chairman show a complete disregard for the potential harm suffered by consumers from Harvey Norman's misleading conduct. And the judge cited a Sydney Morning Herald interview where Harvey said the whole legal system is completely effed in Australia and quoted Harvey at his company's 2024 annual meeting saying the court had no influence whatsoever. Court rulings had no influence whatsoever. People didn't stop shopping at Qantas. With a bit of luck, they won't stop shopping at Harvey Norman. So, yeah, a bit of a sad story for poor Jerry, a lovely bloke.
Sad.
Yeah.
That's a company acting as a non-bank bank, isn't it, when they've got their fingers in the finance side of it?
Yeah, that's right. Well, anyway, they now mention in the ads that you do have to do the Latitude thing and pay up front and all that, but they...
There won't be any restitution, though, will there, out of that $35 million?
No. And that appalling... Pauline Hanson, she says, and this is something I think we would never have realised without her alerting it to us. Oh. She is bright. She knows what's going on in the world. Mm. She says that she likes one of her great reasons why she loves Gina Rinehart, apart from trips around the world and aeroplanes and other donations, is that Gina did it tough, she said.
Oh, yeah. She can relate, can she?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Like Jerry does it tough, you know. He's doing it. Yeah, like there we are. She did it tough, see?
Kevin's waving the photos in the paper at me.
That's it.
People looking tough, doing it tough.
Now, an interesting one is that Rio Tinto has just announced a bloke called Simon Trott, which is interesting, Trot being in Rio Tinto. But anyway, that's politically interesting. says that the data construction boom will drive strong demand for their copper, iron or aluminium, and their $6.6 billion half-year profit enabled to reward investors with an interim dividend of $2.11 per share, and they've made this huge profit. Now, on the same day, we had Albanese urging the New South Wales government to join it in helping bail out the Tomago aluminium plant run by Rio Tinto. Mm. So I would have thought there's a rough chance with all those profits Rio Tinto might bail itself out.
I guess they don't have that little channel, do they, where they can send the money through. It's too hard to dip your finger from your right pocket to your left pocket.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. So that is a bit of a problem, isn't it? Mm. And also, the headline says it all. Ampol rakes it in on refining trebling profits because of with what's happening in the Straits of Hormuz, etc. They're suddenly soaring profits from turning crude oil into petrol and diesel have spurred a trebling in Ampol's earnings. And their Lytton plant in Brisbane, the price soared to $44.46 a barrel in the June quarter, four times higher than a year earlier, and their profits have soared to $1.35 billion. Mm. Now, also...
Doesn't stop.
No. Also, in the headline, refiners rake it in but want more aid. So the same people who are making record profits now say that if they're going to keep refining in Australia, the government's got to subsidise them and help them out. So, again, one obviously that bit about getting from your left crocket to your right or right to left, etc., is just too difficult for them, isn't it?
No, apparently it is.
Yeah.
So no such thing as profiteering in a semi-wartime situation.
Oh, God, no. Is that the idea? God, where did that come from?
And can we also remember where inflation's coming from? It's obviously coming from the workers who want pay rises, isn't it? Not from these companies who are making their record profits.
Well, if only workers would... Well, there's two things that affect inflation if you listen to the Reserve Bank. One is workers getting paid, and second is not enough workers not being paid. In that unemployment is too high,
that's
too
right.
low.
That's
too
right.
low. It's not enough.
Too many workers getting
that's
paid.
Right.
We need to unpay them.
So there's the selfish workers. So there's the people, the good workers who aren't working, who are helping inflation. But there should need to be more of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the selfish workers who go to work. And they're the ones who are really causing the problem.
I feel like I've suddenly fallen through the rabbit hole.
You have.
Okay.
And, yes, it's quite dreadful.
It's quite
actually.
A lesson here.
Yeah, yeah. Now, here's one you wouldn't you'd be surprised about as well.
Mm.
This is in America, but I'm sure it's happening here as well. In order to overcome the slight problem of, say, not getting quite enough money, the food industry is slipping cheap ingredients in to boost their profits.
Never.
No, yes.
I'm shocked.
Into processed food, which is going to kill you in the first place. Put in something else that makes it even more lethal.
I didn't think they had more barrels to scrape on that one.
it is astonishing, isn't it?
Mm.
But anyway, that's what happens there. There was an interesting full-page ad yesterday in the... it might have been in the hour. I didn't see the age. I'll check it out later. But yesterday's Financial Review, listen to the science, stop the carbon offset rot, to protect Australians, our bush, our animals and our livelihoods, phase out fossil fuels and stop logging native forests. We have no time to waste. We can't offset extinction. Australia Institute research shows the safeguard mechanism is failing to drive real emission reductions across Australian industry because it enables polluters to rely on unlimited amounts of offsets. Well, we know all that rubbish. And it was signed by, there's six there and there's eight columns, 48 different groups, mainly to do with climate stuff, but it's just interesting. What I found interesting, though, was that the Australian Conservation Foundation... It's not one of them, although there is ACF Community Boroondara and ACF Community Eastern Rosellas, but no actual ACF. Which because there were accusations that the ACF was because it gets wants to rely a bit more on government money, etc., was not being as hard as it could and forthright in what's going on. But then since Adam Band took over, there's been, it's been argued that, in fact, they're now getting more back to the basics and taking on the government, et cetera, and we've seen him at recent events. So I don't know how it happened, but there's all sorts of environmental groups there and other groups that are, including from my area, the Climate Action Merribeck is there, for instance, in those 48 things. But I just found that interesting.
Nice to see them all on one page.
Yes, and it is. I mean, around the world at the moment, we're seeing the most extraordinary events taking place. And how can those? And they still do. People like Bolt and company, those idiots. They still deny what's staring them in the face and what's certainly staring the people of Europe and America and Canada in the face at the moment. Very much.
Yep.
All right, look, we'll keep the cheering going. We'll talk to Sean Tyrrell in a moment about his experience with our public transport system.
All right, Kevin, everything's going to be all right.
Yeah, sure will. Right's the word.
I'm sitting here in jail, a young black male, doing my time, cause I committed a crime. I was a young black thug on drugs. I didn't want my mother's hugs on the outside. Trying to juggle two things at once. Trying to deal with my family problems with drugs. Had my three strikes out. I'm sitting here in the dugout.
As I sit here looking through my steel curtain, I feel my family on the outside still hurting. I hear the vibes that I didn't want to hear. Things that I shouldn't have heard are now clear. I sit here and wonder about my future dreams, sitting with my family in the bush by the stream. I can't change the past to suit ya, so now I'm gonna be good and go with the future. Yo, yo.
Everything's gonna be alright. Everything's gonna be alright, yeah. Everything's gonna be alright. Everything's gonna be alright, yeah. Everything's gonna be alright. Everything's gonna be alright, yeah. Everything's gonna be alright.
Life's just begun. You think life's fun, but you're too young to realize the pain and hate and the suffering. Take example from a young black girl. She was brought up in a hard, hard world, where her father was abusive and her love was elusive.
The young black sister thinks it's how it is, so she sells herself on the side of the city streets to earn some money for her drunken father, but he still only hits her fucking harder. Young sister girl, only 14, meets a man who has opened up his heart and given her his hand. Tell her he loves her just as like her father, but ends up only abusing her even harder.
Everything's gonna be alright. Everything's gonna be alright, yeah. Everything's gonna be alright. Everything's gonna be alright, yeah. Everything's gonna be alright. Everything's gonna be alright, yeah. Everything's gonna be alright. Everything's gonna be alright, yeah.
What's up with it? She never leaves until she finds she's pregnant and on her knees, begging for God's forgiveness for the life that she leads.
Okay, everything's going to be all right, fades away. Everything wasn't all right, though, with poor Sean Tyrrell a couple of weeks ago. Sean spoke at a rally for accessible public transport a couple of Saturdays ago, looking at Sydney Road. And Sean, you relayed a story there about the previous weekend when the trains weren't running, which is not an irregular thing on the Upfield line, of course. And difficulties you had just getting basic information. Could you tell us the story?
Yeah, I'm happy to. Good morning, Kevin. Oh,
but may point out to people, of course, that you're blind, Sean, so you had that was part of the difficulty.
It was, yeah. So as often happened, buses were replacing trains when the Upfield line where I live was closed for some works. And there's going to be a lot more of this when we get up to the proposed level crossing removal in a few years' time. But yeah, I had a terrible time as a blind person just accessing that service and observed, you know, problems that for other people who live around Brunswick as well. So for me as a blind person, the first problem I had was just finding out where the bus went from. I got to the station and there were signs. Of course, though, I can't see because I'm blind. So I called Public Transport Victoria and just asked that information, and they weren't sure and they put me on hold for a while and then came back saying, oh, sorry, the only information we've got is that the buses are running between Sunbury and North Melbourne. Those people a lot of listening would know. Brunswick actually isn't.
That was a big help to you, of course.
Yeah, so that was tricky. So I waited there for a while. Eventually, another person turned up and I asked them where the bus was going from. So they told me. So I walked down there and found it. And then a bus replacing the train turned up and I got on it. But the next problem I had was when we've been going for a while, what's supposed to happen and what happens regularly on trains following a court case about a decade ago is there's always an announcement just saying what the stop is. I'm actually at Amsterdam Station now and you can possibly hear one of those announcements in the background. But on this bus service, even though Metro is the provider, has put in the contract that the bus is replacing trains, much announced the stop. So on this occasion, they didn't. And I've actually never been on a bus replacing trains where there's any kind of information about your location during the journey or where the stop is. A lot of blind or vision impaired people just won't use bus services because of this reason, because buses just still haven't made the accessibility gains that some other forms of public transport have. So I felt really unsafe. I felt like the service was really inaccessible to me. But before I got up, I noticed that other people were having some terrible troubles as well. I got talking to a couple with a pram, and they were telling me that even though the bus is supposed to provide to put a ramp down to enable people with children in prams to safely go on the bus, they said that that hadn't happened to them. They had to get assistance from people on the street to be able to lift it up, and then found that upsetting, and they didn't know how they were going to be able to get the pram off the train again. And when we did get to the first stop, which hadn't actually been announced, but I'm guessing it was probably Jewel Station, there was a traveller from the United States just sort of asking about what to do. I think I can't see him, but I think he had some sort of mobility aid, and was just saying, oh, can I get that on, or, what am I supposed to do? But the assistance, wasn't provided to him. And then the answer to his question, I think it was a driver, it might have been somebody else on the bus, but they simply said, oh, well, you should ride. You should just roll to get to where you wanted to go. But this poor person was actually going all the way from Brunswick into the city. So it's an awful.
It's a long roll.
It is. So, this is what I'm describing. It's pretty consistent, I think, with experiences when buses do replace our trains that a lot of blind people have, or people with prams, or people with mobility aids. We do really rely on the trains to be able to get around. It's by a long way the most accessible form of public transport that we have in Victoria. And, I will admit, we're getting there very slowly with accessible trams and then their buses. It's really a battle that we're just beginning to have to try and ensure that all those modes are equally accessible to people, whether they're families or people with disability or blind people, whatever it is.
Yeah, in fact, they made it worse over the years because they took staff off stations and guards off trains, etc. I mean, years ago, Martin Stewart, his brother, had a terrible accident because they'd taken the guard off the train and people off. I don't know if you know that one, but he used his cane to get into the train, and what he thought was the door was the space between the carriages, and he ended up on the line and being carted along. It was quite awful.
It was terrible, yeah. For listeners, that was in about 2000 at the station. I remember organising a protest to try and get some more safety features into Richmond Station after that happened, which, to their credit, the Brexit government did do. So we're just hoping, I guess, with some of the problems that we're currently having on Sydney roads, with the last accessible stop being at Brunswick Road and then nothing else for 5.5 kilometres. Yeah. We are really keen for the Carroll government to follow the lead of Mr Brax and just to think more carefully about the sequencing of when we want to shut the train line down. I think for a lot of people, whether they're families or people with disability around Brunswick, we'd like to see some accessible stops on Sydney Road first and then, in a few years' time, we can tend to the upgrades to the outfield line that the government is wanting to do.
Well, I think you have to assume, clearly, if they go ahead with the level crossing removals, as I think they shouldn't anyway, but nonetheless, if they do, they surely can't do it without having accessible transport on Sydney Road, because otherwise people like you, and particularly people with mobility problems, are just going to be locked out altogether.
Well, I think so, yeah. And I also think that there's really significant issues around compliance with law. There's some listeners would know. We were supposed to have all of our conveyances, trams and everything else, fully accessible by 2022 under federal accessible transport law, but Victoria missed that milestone. And we're also supposed to have all the stops accessible by 2032, but it seems really unlikely that we'll be achieving that milestone as well. So I just think there needs to be a bit of common sense in thinking about what communities are asking for and trying to get the sequencing right so that entire subpopulations are basically left without any kind of public transport they can use for extended periods. And as good as some of the work that's been done around Melbourne with some of the other level crossing removals, it's come at a heavy cost, I think, for some vulnerable populations. We could do a lot more to try and mitigate that harm.
Yeah, and one I'm sure you've noticed is that it happens rarely, but it does happen. On the tram, they often are one stop out in terms of announcing the next stop. And that's, you know, if you're blind, that's a real problem.
It is, actually. Not infrequently, I have the experience of getting off a tram where that problem is happening and realising that I'm a stop or two from where I intended to be. It used to happen on trains. It happens a lot less now. I think Metro's announcements are pretty reliable. So I know that the Transport Department is working to address those problems on trams. And good luck to them. I'm confident they obviously will be.
There's one at Parliament Station, which I go to sometimes. There's an announcement on the Upfield line that this is, the next train's to Upfield, but not stopping at South Kensington, which is technically true, but of course it isn't on the line.
Yeah, I know. there is all sorts of quirks, and I've had all sorts of humorous experiences. The new, $8 billion underground stations, shrink though Parkville Station is. It's some of the other ones, particularly at State Library and Town Hall. The information can be a little bit scurry at times. So, we do our best to try and get home the best that we can.
Yeah, the government's put out a press release saying that new G-class trams will be on the network from July 30, which has just passed. The first new trams in a decade, and they're more accessible, but of course they're only accessible if the stop itself is accessible as well.
It's a terrible problem. It is great that you can now, say, get from Melbourne Central to Brunswick Road, and there's an accessible tram and accessible stops, but there's another, at least just on that Route 19 Sydney Road tram, there's another 5.5 kilometres after that, and many new tram lines have got the similar problem. You might be able to get from one key interchange to another if you're lucky, but we're not really, I think, where we need to be. And the Victorian Auditor General, of course, looked into this several times and identified that there are huge legal risks to government. So we do need to accelerate and work with community to get accessible tram stops where they're most needed and the best we can.
They're currently doing works to at the tram depot in Sydney Road to allow the trams to come straight onto Sydney Road out of the depot. And I believe they are going to put an accessible tram stop there at the end of those works. So there'll be another one there, but still a long gap between accessible stops along the route.
It is a lot. It's a really long way. And look, talking to
just roll, Kevin.
where people, I think people are actually keen to see the tram stops in different places without the front of a depot. Yeah, that might work well for Yarra Trams itself, but it's not really aligned to where health facilities are in Coburg and Brunswick, or where schools are. Where shopping is, the sorts of things that people actually need.
Yeah, it's a matter of will, of course. I mean, going back the years with Katie Ball and the Stuarts and fighting for accessible public transport, we were told 15 years, every year it was going to be 15 years. Then they had that 2022 deadline, but they've met none of them, of course.
No. There are. And look, I know there are disabled people within the transport department who've been fighting for years to try and get this done, but the progress is frustratingly slow. And government's made choices about the kinds of infrastructure that I wanted to do more quickly. But I think a lot of Victorians and Melburnians would really prefer a greater share of those dollars to be put into tram stops. You can get a pram safely onto a tram and follow some of the good work that's already been done with the train system.
Here's a bad thought. What if you put the money they're going to spend on the level crossing removals into accessible transport, and also duplicated the line north so you could have a better than 20-minute service?
Well, I mean, at the rally that we had a couple of weeks ago on Sydney Road, that was one of the things that people talked about. Postpone the level crossing removal, put the money into accessible tram stops, do something about the bike path that so many people around Brunswick and Coburg also rely on. Like, I think there is real scope to deliver something that is valued by community really quickly, and there's going to be less reward as we get closer to the election to being dogmatic about level crossing removals and wanting to continue the plan that was laid down a long, long time ago now. I just think there are things that, you know, people want more to happen quickly.
Absolutely. Look, Sean, thanks for your time this morning, and we'll probably talk again about it, but keep up the good work.
Thank you, Kevin. All right, okay. Enjoy being on.
Talk okay, thanks. Okay, Sean Tyrrell there, as you can tell, who's, you know, fighting hard for accessibility. And after the break, John McPherson.
And I think everything is still going to be all right, Kevin.
Good.
I'm sitting here in jail, a young black male, doing my time because I committed a crime. I was a young black thug on drugs. I didn't want my mother's hugs on the outside. Trying to juggle two things at once. Trying to deal with my family problems with drugs. Had my three strikes out. I'm sitting here in the dugout. As I sit here looking through my steel curtain, I feel my family on the outside still hurting. I hear the vibes that I didn't want to hear. Things that I shouldn't have heard are now clear. I sit here and wonder about my future dreams. Sitting with my family in the bush by the stream. I can't change the past to suit ya, so now I'm gonna be good and go with the future. Yo, yo.
Everything's gonna be alright. Everything's gonna be alright, yeah. Everything's gonna be alright. Everything's gonna be alright, yeah. Everything's gonna be alright. Everything's gonna be alright, yeah. Everything's gonna be alright.
Life's just begun. You think life's fun, but you're too young to realize the pain and hate and the suffering. Take example from a young black girl. She was brought up in a hard, hard world.
Okay, John McPherson on the line, who's our regular commentator on transport. And John, you've long been complaining, I guess, about the problems of information on our transport system. And I think Sean just raised a few that are pretty clear.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Yes, yes. Certainly, the issues with information for replacement buses. I don't know. It doesn't seem to get any better, does it? I mean, you know, with the level crossing removal program, and it's been a huge program. You'd think that all the issues would have been sorted out when, you know, bus companies take over the services for the routes where the level crossings are being removed. Yeah, you would think that would be, you know, everything would run smooth and everybody would know what to do and what information is needed, and the drivers of the buses would be well briefed and be able to tell people where they're going and all those sort of things. But it doesn't seem to happen necessarily at all.
No, and of course you talked about other problems other people getting on with the tram, the tourist or whatever, with apparently in a wheelchair.
Oh boy, that was brave, yeah. Wasn't it?
Yeah,
being a tourist and getting on, yeah, wanting to navigate our public transport in a wheelchair. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. But
that was. You know, assuming we really were a first world country.
Well, currently with those works on at the tram depot, the road has been narrowed right down.
Mm-hmm.
But at some stage, the member for Pasco Vale told us a while ago, they're going to have to close the Sydney Road altogether for a week or two during the works. The works that are bringing the trams, as they, you know, they come out for the back now down Moorland Road. They're going to come straight onto Sydney Road, which is probably a good thing. But if during that week or two when they're closed, they also have a weekend where they, which happens regularly, the upfield line isn't running, people, you know, not just people with disabilities, all people will be without public transport. So.
Oh, but Kevin, when you've got a public transport system, all the parts talk to each other. And so they'll know all that and they'll understand.
That's right, the Tower of Babel.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I'm absolutely confident, Kevin, all those things will be taken into account.
Of course they will, John, of course. That's good. But it is
and
a worry.
There'll be a little bus going around the back streets. Don't you worry about that.
I think we need to sort them out before then somehow. But certainly that's a difficult one. And, of course, since our last program with you, in fact, a week later, because I know a week later we interviewed David Spratt and we had trouble with the Telstra line.
Oh, yeah.
Ironically, with that way it went down, we couldn't get to him, but he could ring into us and get in on the landline here, which was interesting.
We
ended up, so we did the interview, went ahead.
Right.
But that was when the Telstra thing came down. So a week later, we had trains out altogether. I mean, just how does that happen, that Telstra has a breakdown?
Yeah.
And so the public transport breaks down.
Yeah. Well, as I understand it, no, I don't know whether there was much, you know, very detailed information dribbled out about really what had happened. But as I understand it, the Telstra's digital phone system is the, sort of a backup for the rail stuff. And they didn't feel that it was safe to be running the rail system, e.g. the signals, you know, the lights that tell the train driver where to stop and where to go, when to go, sorry, did not say where to go. That they need a sort of a backup that Telstra provided, where the drivers and the control centre people can talk to each other as well. So I understand it, that's actually what went out. But of course, once upon a time, for 120 years, they ran the trains without any extra backup. They just, all the drivers got was the signals, and there was no talking to the control centre. But of course, in the modern era, we can't do that. We've got to have this extra layer to feel confident that we know where our trains are. So it was something like that happened. And you know, to give them their due, you would assume that the Telstra system, being the most comprehensive and, you know, the most, you would think, technologically organised system of the various, what you call them, the mobile systems. You know, there's Optus and there's a third system as well, which is people like TPG and things like that. And then there's also Telstra. But you assume that Telstra would be the best system. But if you're going to have that sort of thing, you've got to have backup of backup. And therefore, you would expect that the digital system would cascade to a second digital system if the first one failed. But that didn't appear to be organised, certainly not in Victoria, because the trains were stopped all over Victoria and the parts of New South Wales as well. So at least you weren't alone in our, stupidity. Parts of New South Wales, it was the same. So, you know, basically it was an issue of not having enough backup for the backup.
And, of course, the other problem V-Line had was they couldn't find enough buses to replace the... Because with everything out, they had to run... If they were going to try and buses on every service.
Mm.
Plus, because of the phone being down, they couldn't contact the bus companies, apparently.
Mm.
So it was it just kept spinning on and on.
Mm. Mm. Apparently, in enlightened countries like Canada, at least the emergency services, if one mobile phone system goes out, e.g. one lot of towers fails, you automatically cascade to a second lot. So at least emergency services can always get through. But apparently we don't have that in Australia. But obviously we should have it in Australia. So no doubt after there have been a few more of these failures, they'll finally force all the digital phone companies to talk to each other and organise a system like they've got in Canada.
Yeah, well, that was talked about immediately after the event, that's for sure, yeah.
But, of course,
V-Line went an extra day as well. I mean, for whatever reason, the next day they also weren't running most of the next day.
Well, I think that their excuse for that was, all our trains are in the wrong place, you know, because they've been sitting around for a day.
They're on the lines.
Yeah, but of course, forgive me, but I think they were quite happy to have an extra day when they could all go and, you know, recover from the ghastliness of it all. They weren't necessarily feeling like they are a basic service that always should work. I don't think they see themselves like that anymore. They're just there doing what they feel like doing. But once upon a time, you know, the train system was seen as critical to the transport system of the state, and that the trains would be back on the line absolutely as fast as possible. But not anymore, I don't think.
No, so it could happen again. I mean, obviously, unless they do something very drastic very quickly, if it happened again, it could happen again, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, you would hope that there's some emergency action being taken behind the scenes to sort it out. So it doesn't happen.
You'd hope. You hope, John.
Yeah. I think, you know, like a lot of these things, it'll have to happen a few more times, and then the politicians at their level are going to have to scream and yell, and maybe something will happen.
Yeah. All right. And, of course, also with our new Premier, whom the business community is rubbing its hands over, they're so happy. Nonetheless, he is talking about reviewing the rail loop, which is one of your problems for a number of years.
Yeah. Well, look, two things. Should we be building the rail loop at all, at least right now, when there are so many other things need fixing and improving on the current public transport we've got? And then a second line is, well, okay, you've started building the eastern section, and you've got the great underground caverns built, and you've got the great diggers that dig the tunnels in place, ready to go. Okay, we'll just build the eastern section from Cheltenham through Monash and up to Box Hill, Burwood, Box Hill, build that section, and then maybe stop it at that point and review how much further you want to go and how you want to do it. I think two main factors. Does the whole thing have to be underground? Because it's incredibly expensive to build underground. Why there are surely sections that could be on ground or on a viaduct above ground? Because we've learnt with the level crossing removal that, you know, sections elevated in the air aren't necessarily going to be all that noisy or anything like that, and it's much cheaper to put things up on viaducts and things like that rather than going underground all the time. And, of course, if you don't go underground, the stations become a lot cheaper because you don't have to dig out a great cavern underground, which is, again, incredibly expensive. So, you know, there are lots of things, not lots of questions that need asking. And then another question I have is surely there are spaces between those stations where they need extra stations on the track, you know, all the stations don't only have to be at the points where the new loop line crosses the current radial lines. There are long gaps in the loop line, new loop line, where they could surely have extra stations. A bit the same way our new Premier is getting a station out in where is it again, Kevin? Remind me, out in. The line to the airport's getting an extra station out in Airport West. Yeah.
Ah, right, yeah.
Yeah, that's he's getting a new station on the line to the airport. Well, you know, that's a worthwhile station, but it's you know, it's going to make the whole airport line slightly more interesting to build. But I think that could be useful on the loop line in general.
There's a bit of self-preservation in all that because the airport line is through his electorate.
Yes.
And he's anxious for that.
It's interesting, isn't it?
And they have done a speculation that they could save $21 billion if they just abandoned the whole rail loop proposal altogether.
Well, I've learned in the past when they've started abandoning projects, you know, they didn't. The Andrews government pulled out of building the east-west road tunnel in the inner north, and that cost over $1 billion
to compensate.
So I, you know, it's always hard to know how much these these things will cost to abandon. But yeah,
interesting yesterday though, John, that in the reallocation of portfolios,
yeah,
he completely dropped the minister for the rail loop. There was a minister, and that's been dropped from the ministry altogether.
Well, that's interesting. Well, that sort of does seem to be hinting at a certain direction, doesn't it? Because there's now nobody in the ministry, just concentrating on promoting the rail loop. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, I feel slightly cheered up by that.
Oh, good. I'm certain the previous minister doesn't, but but that's how it goes.
Yeah, well, there are just so many other things on our present public transport system that don't work as well as they should, and there are so many rail lines that need fixing, it particularly at their outer ends where the lines go down to single track, like your uphill line. And there are other lines that do the same thing. And what that means is that the number of trains you can run per hour is restricted because the single-track section, makes it impossible to run all the trains to the end of the line. So it restricts the number of trains you can run. And that's the case on quite a number of lines. I think Lilydale's all right, but I think the Belgrade line goes down to single track. And there are plenty of lines too that I think need a bit of an extension. One that has always seemed a bit ridiculous to me is that the Frankston line doesn't get extended, at least as far as Baxter, which is about 3 or 4 kilometres. And Baxter, is sort of still on the edge of the built-up area around Frankston, and that would be a logical place to have a massive park-and-ride arrangement, I think. Because the station in the middle of Frankston's pretty constrained, and of course Baxter would probably be a good place to have bus connections to the train and all sorts of things. So, there are plenty if not huge projects that I think need fixing,
and don't need to go underground, John.
No, Kevin, you don't. I think Andrews, when he had the rush of blood to the head about the suburban rail loop, he thought, oh well, big cities always put their metros underground, therefore we've got to put our metro underground. But you only put metros underground when you absolutely have to, because of the high cost. It's a bit like the same as the Northeast Link. There's a lot of extra tunnelling happening on the Northeast Link, which I don't think was strictly necessary, and that's one of the reasons why the cost of that is more than doubled, it seems to me, because again they thought, oh no, we can't have a bridge across the river, and the floodplains of the Yarra. We've got to put it underground. It'd be just too awful to have a bridge over the Yarra there. But I'm afraid there are plenty of other people are being subjected to the noise of the freeways around Melbourne. I'm afraid I don't see why those people should be, completely.
Well, they're trying to save money on the North East Link because they're lowering the fence at primary school out there. It's a state primary school, of course, Bellevue.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They've both lowered. One noise barrier's been taken away altogether. Another one's been lowered, and they've cheaper material. So they're trying to save some money, John.
Oh, good. Well, they're trying to save money, of course, for people that don't count in their in their scheme of things.
Yeah, that's what the locals seem to think as well.
Yes.
The school community. Apparently the school numbers have dropped off since the work started because of these problems.
The kids getting to school has got quite difficult as well while these huge works are going on.
The whole
scale of this linkage is just unbelievable out there. I mean,
it's enormous, isn't it? But they did find the money to put in the right barriers at St Kevin's College years ago when they went near there, John. So that's
okay. Of course, Kevin. Yeah. Well, those kids count. They matter.
That's right. And it's a great name, of course, St Kevin. So that's all right.
Named after you, was it?
If it was, then I made a mistake. But anyway, noise and also, but also
noise. I mean, I'm not saying noise isn't an issue, but I'm not saying.
But
that.
Also, according to the locals, it also because it's lower, the kids are going to cop much more pollution from the exhaust pipes, the particulates.
Oh well, we're assured that those things don't happen, Kevin. Remember the. We're always told, you know, the ventilation stacks for the tunnels never produce pollution that's going to be dangerous.
We certainly hope not, because they're right next to the school.
I shouldn't laugh.
A lack of concern, doesn't it? Because I mean, surely. If you're going to do these things, you have to put in the best and most, even if it's expensive, the best way of protecting the community.
Well, there you go. You see, you'd be building tunnels everywhere, but the tunnels are they're very expensive. And, you know, I am saying that I still think that there's too much tunnel being built because tunnels are incredibly expensive, but I guess that was the judgment of the politicians that they were going to build tunnels. I was telling an engineer friend that the parts of that road are going to be 20 lanes wide. He comes from Canberra. He couldn't believe it. He simply could not believe what I was
saying. That's
telling
when it hits the Eastern Freeway. It's that wide. And it then eliminates any possibility of ever having a rail line to Doncaster at all, because it takes it away.
Well, they're getting they are getting a dedicated busway along the side.
Oh, how good.
Yeah,
it's wonderful.
Oh, well, electric buses are not a bad thing.
Well, if they're electric, that's good.
Well, they will be in the end. They will be in the end.
But speaking of tunnels, John, the Westgate Tunnel was promised to get trucks off streets in Yarraville and Footscray, but Melbourne City's screaming and yelling because apparently the number of trucks coming through Kensington has tripled. Because trucks are obviously clearly avoiding the a pretty huge toll Transurban.
Well, it's exactly what you'd expect to happen, and the truckies aren't made of money, and if they're not working for a big company that pays those tolls, you know, for them, they're up for it personally, and they've got to extract the cost from their customers, which can be difficult in hard times. So surprise, surprise, they're trying to use the back streets, which, of course, in those sort of areas are very narrow and it is ridiculous. But, you know, that all could have been predicted, I would have thought.
Well, it could have been, but apparently a 24-hour pass for trucks is $51 and... $21.40 for a single trip through one of the toll points. So I don't know how many toll points you go through, but it's certainly causing major problems for those areas.
It's nice that there's less traffic on, you know, some of the major roads like Williamstown Road, I gather. It's got less truck traffic, but if it's just being transferred to the back streets, it's not much of a benefit.
It's good for, because Yarraville was complaining for years, and it's good that they've been relieved.
Yeah,
but they don't get relief by putting it to someone else.
As we know, the oldest trucks tend to be the ones that are used in the metro area because they're running short trips, and if they break down and not as far from help, shall we say, which is probably one of the reasons why we seem to get so many breakdowns of trucks on the bridges. Because they're the older trucks being used for shorter trips around the city, whereas the newer trucks are used for the longer trips into the country. And so that's another perverse result of the way we organise transport. Whereas, you know, trucks are seen as the answer to every question, and rail is seen as hardly important. Whereas, of course, as we move into this carbon constrained world, where everything is going to have to be electrified, it's a whole lot easier to electrify rail than it is to electrify roads. But they don't seem to get that.
Yeah, and in fact, on that, there's a big blue taking place currently in Western Australia in the mining area about electrifying trucks and things. But that's another question. We might come to that some stage.
Well, to give a shout out, at least Twiggy Forrester and his company, Fortescue, they are getting into electrification of everything at their mines.
Yeah.
Much more quickly than other companies.
He's in a blue with the other companies at the moment over that very issue.
And, really? Oh,
yeah.
I don't know. Is that what the Financial Review tells you, Kevin?
Yeah, it is, yeah, John. Yeah, that's right. So he's.
I'm not sure he's actually been a blue with them. I think he would just be irritating them because he's a far advanced.
Well, probably, yeah, but there's
that
a big...
doing it, whereas
well, it's a blue with sort of it's a blue with the traditional companies that made the that make the other trucks. They're fighting back to try and stop electrification. I think that's the question.
Yeah, well, the Financial Review would be very deeply sympathetic to that. Yes.
yeah, that's where it's at.
Yes. Yeah. Well, there are companies in China and companies in Germany who are already producing electric trucks.
That's right.
And Twiggy's already got some of them, and apparently they work just fine.
But, Chinese.
But the other companies are saying, oh, it'll take us decades to get round to it. Yeah.
Exactly. That's the dispute that's going on at the moment.
That was my guess, yeah.
So I've been running out of time because I want to announce a rally today, so we'll but we'll do more next month.
Yeah. I'll just say my usual mantra. Everything's got to coordinate to make a big public transport system like ours work. Trains and trams have got to be really frequent so that you can swap from one to the other easily. And there should be lots of feeder buses feeding into the railway stations and to the tram lines. But, you know, all those basic principles seem a bit hard.
Pity you weren't made Minister for Transport yesterday, John. It's just solved all that.
Thanks a lot, John.
Okay. I probably want to beat somebody.
Thanks for your time.
We'll talk
next month, John. Thanks heaps. We're going fractionally with John because I want to announce today there's this rally at 1 o'clock. It says 12:30 here, but I think it's 1 o'clock they've been advertising it as, at 1 Spring Street for public housing residents, elder abuse and throwing older people out of public housing. And there's a rally at the Minister's office at 1 Spring Street today. The thing in front of me says 12:30, but I know the add-on has been saying 1 o'clock.
Mm.
But anyway, around that time, wander down there about 12:30, 1 o'clock, and support the public housing residents who are being thrown out of their residence. And... that's it for City Limits. Next week it's energy issues, and I've got absolutely no idea what we're going to do next week. But,
okay. But we will be here.
And thanks heaps.
Thank you, Kevin. And you are on 3CR Community Radio. Stay with us now for Anarchist World this week.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.